I will, first of all, I'd like to thank Stephen and CSIS for the invitation to be here with you and to make this short presentation on the general health status and HIV and AIDS epidemic challenges in Mozambique. You see there a map of Africa, and in front of Madagascar, that island, you see Mozambique here, with borders with Tanzania, Malawi, Zimbabwe, Zambia, South Africa, and here in the south with Swaziland. Now, these are some of indicators from the country. We estimate the population to be around 18.5 million. The next census will be next year. The last census was in 97. So what we are using so far are projections. Mozambique is one of the poorest countries in the world. 10 years ago, we were the poorest. Fortunately, we are climbing up. Early in the 90s, our GDP per capita was less than $100. It's now around 250, I suppose. But the official number that we are using is still $220. Mozambique is still one of the 20 poorest countries in the world. The good news is that in the last 7 years, we've been having an average annual growth rate of 7%. Per capita expenditure for health, first, the percentage of the government budget spent on health care is 11%, is one of the highest in Africa. Yet, this translates in only $4 per capita. And as you know, if you read the book from Jeffrey Sachs, any other calculations, you will realize that the minimum you find in these books is around 10, 12. Jeffrey Sachs goes to 34. We are still around $5. Now, infant mortality rate, 125, and maternal mortality ratio, 408. These are data from the demographic inquiry in 2003. The next demographic inquiry will be in 2008, and we expect these numbers to go down. The main problem in my country is that the health service network covers roughly half of the population. This is our problem. If you use the data from WHO, WHO states that each health unit has covers an area which doesn't go more than 8 kilometers. If anyone lives more than 8 kilometers from the nearest health unit, it is considered by the WHO not to be covered. And in my country, 50% of the population lives further than 8 kilometers. We still have 9 months pregnant ladies walking 30, 40, 50 kilometers just to reach the first health unit to deliver. This gives you an idea of the dimension of the problem, and that is why we keep saying if someone comes and wants to help us, first help us to expand our health network, especially in rural areas where 2/3 of our people live. And this is such an easy thing that anybody that goes to that country understands. Now, the main causes of morbidity and mortality in my country, among adults, malaria, HIV, AIDS, TB. If we turn to children, it's first acute respiratory infections, second malaria, third anemia, fourth malnutrition, and lastly AIDS. Especially in cities, we see what we call the emerging diseases, non-communicable diseases like arterial hypertension, the problem of trauma due mainly to road traffic accidents, diabetes is on the increase, and cancer. And Mozambique is the country in the world with the highest incidence of liver cancer. Number one in the world in liver cancer. We still don't know why. There are lots of theories, but nothing proven.
What do you think the most likely explanation is on the liver cancer?
Well, you see, until early 90, the explanation was aflatoxin. And then they changed and they're not talking about hepatitis B. But so far there is no clear-cut explanation. We have a lot of cancer of the bladder related with schistosomiasis. It's different from the first world where the cancer of the bladder is related with chemical products like anilines and so on. But we do see, although our national health information system is weak, we do see a trend on the increase of diabetes cases and, of course, hypertension. Arterial hypertension is a problem, a public health problem in our country. Now, in my country, the private sector in health covers less than 5% of the population and is mainly in two or three cities. So if you talk about the health sector, you're talking mainly of the public health sector. We achieved independence on the 25th of June 1975, which is 31 years ago. And immediately after independence, we decided to create what is called the National Health Service, like in the UK. Now, at present, in my country, we have only 600 doctors, which is less than you have in a big hospital here in Washington, D.C. In one hospital, you have more doctors than we have in a country, the whole country. And the staff doesn't reach 20,000. We have around 1,250 health facilities. You will see 37 hospitals, ranging from the biggest hospital in the country has got 1,600 beds, and the small hospital is around 40. The health centers, they are small units. And then we have health posts in remote areas, in rural areas. And some of these health posts are staffed with only one health worker to do everything. And these are heroes. These are not health workers. These are heroes. We have a drug procurement and distribution system that functions reasonably well, I have to say. And we do have less than one bed per 1,000 inhabitants. These are indicators that the World Health Organization uses, and that will give you an idea of how much the national health system needs to grow and to expand. And this is one of my main messages. Yet we do have some achievements. For instance, in immunization, our DPT-3 rate is 88%. It should be more than 80%. And the prenatal care attendance is 64%. Although the percentage of women that deliver in health units is between 45 and 50%. So more than half of the Mozambican women deliver at home in very difficult conditions. And this explains our high rate of maternal mortality and also the very high rate of neonatal mortality. Our major health programs in the Ministry of Health. First of all, malaria. You should understand that malaria is still the number one disease in terms of morbidity and mortality. If you take into account children and women, malaria is by far the number one cause of mortality. Second, tuberculosis. Tuberculosis was never well controlled in my country, but it's becoming worse now due to this association with HIV/AIDS. In my country, roughly 40% of the patients, 40% of the TB patients are also HIV positive. And TB plus seropositivity means AIDS. One of the things that still haunts us is leprosy. And we have a program where we expect to finally control leprosy at the end of 2008, when the number of cases will be less than 1 per 10,000 inhabitants. And this is the target that the WHO established for a country to be controlling leprosy. Of course, maternal and child health is one of our main programs. The EPI, Expanding Program of Immunization. Then we have the HIV and AIDS, which is closely linked with the STI, the sexually transmitted infections. Youth and adolescent health, and then we have two programs, one relating to trauma and one relating to degenerative and chronic diseases, which includes arterial hypertension, asthma, cancer, diabetes. The priorities for next year, and this is a question that is frequently asked, what are your priorities for next year? First of all, scale up HIV and AIDS prevention and treatment. And I will talk about this later on. Second, scaling up also malaria prevention and control. Third, tuberculosis and leprosy control. Fourth, but this is the basis for all the rest, is the acceleration of the human resources training, improvement of quality in the healthcare delivery system. And one problem we face all over Africa. If you go to Africa, you will realize that in any country, at least 50% of the health units do not have water nor electricity. In Mozambique, it goes up to 85%. Now, you're talking about things like infection control. You don't have even water. That's what I was telling yesterday. Yeah. If you say you can control AIDS, just taking a glass of potable water, half of the population in Africa wouldn't control AIDS because they don't have access to potable water. Now, this was the last estimate we did in my country. This was done in November 2004. Thank you. You listen to my plea. Yes. So you can see that the overall prevalence rate of HIV infection in my country was 16.2%. This was almost 2 years ago. It was in November 2004. But you see huge differences between areas. It's interesting to see that in the northern part, the blue one, the rates are lower. And then here down in the south, slightly higher. But the problem lies in the central part of the country. This is Sofala, where the second city of the country is. And here, exactly where my finger is a place called Beira. It's the second city in the country where the prevalence rate now is around 30%. The hospital is overcrowded. The situation is terrible there. This is the HIV prevalence by region. We normally divide the country in three regions, north, central, and south. And you can see the differences. You can see that there is more hope in the north than in the other two regions because the differences are striking. This is the HIV prevalence all over the country. Now, you will see here the trends and why we in the government are so concerned. What we are seeing is that notwithstanding all our efforts, in Mozambique, the HIV epidemic is still on the increase. You can see it. We will do the next survey in November this year, and I'm absolutely sure that the numbers will be higher than this. That is why we are so concerned with HIV/AIDS in the country. People in the region will tell me when I meet with my colleagues, the health ministers of other countries, they all look at me and say, lucky you. Why? Because I suppose we will be something around 80 to 20% now. But Swaziland is 34, Botswana is 30-something. So in the area of the Southern Africa development community, Mozambique is still the country with the lowest HIV prevention. But you can see through this number that the situation in my country is already desperate. And we have to do something very, very quickly before the country goes deeper in the abysm.
May I just interrupt you for one moment? I mean, the fact that you are in a slightly different phasing of the increases, you're proximate to Swaziland in South Africa and Zimbabwe, very high prevalence areas. There's lots of mobility through the Beira Corridor, through Swazi in South Africa. What explains why you're in this different phasing from what happened, the way the epidemic unfolded in Swazi?
Oh, South Africa, very easy. It's the easiest answer of... I wish I had all the answers like the one I'm going to give you now. We had a war, a 16-year-long war, and during this time, until late 92, people were not moving.
Yeah.
So early in the 90s, our rates were 4%, while in the neighboring countries they were already in the 20s. This is the good news. The bad news is that we are catching up.
So do you think you have, after the peace settlement and the elections and the UN peace operations of the mid-90s, did you expect there was an explosion of new infections in the sort of 97, 98 period?
Yes. Absolutely. We saw it.
Yeah. Okay.
We saw it. When people started moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Minister, in the north, would you possibly attribute some of the lower figures to the presence of Islam?
This is one of the explanations, you see. I've been not only looking at the data, but also talking with some of the religious leaders. We are fortunate in Mozambique because we have... you see, in terms of numbers, Christians and Muslims are almost the same in numbers. But the relationship is very good. So we are able to interact very well. And they tell me, look, although in the Quran we say that a man can have four women, we do not encourage it. This is the first thing. It's there, but we do not encourage. We encourage a man to have one woman. Second thing, if you have more than one woman, it is sacred that you'll remain there. Yes. And they are very strong on that. Very, very strong. So, can be one reason. But you see, being a doctor, I always ask for evidence. So, I've got a feeling that Islam will have an impact, but I don't have the evidence. Now, this is our guess for the end of last year, according to the projections. And there you can see very clearly what is called all over the world the feminization of the epidemic. More women becoming infected than men. Although, I will show you another graphic where you will see striking differences according to age groups. It's not the same all over the age groups. This is what I wanted to show you. If you go to the age group, you see that it starts at the 15-year-old. You see that between 15 and 19 years old, the percentage of girls is more than double that of boys. It goes on to the next, between 20 and 24, where you can see the drama of the girls and young women. It is still there between 25 and 29, but then suddenly, if you go over 30, the trend is reversed. And this needs a lot of study. Why is this happening? Because unless we understand this, it will be difficult to devise concrete strategies for prevention. Now, what is our policy? What is our strategy? First of all, some historical information. The first case of AIDS was diagnosed in 86. Interestingly, it was a medical doctor from Haiti. Yeah, the first case we diagnosed was not in a Mozambican. It was a medical doctor from Haiti working up country in the northern part of the country. And he was brought from Pemba to Maputo and he died 3 days later. This was. But it was a case of full-blown AIDS. So when we looked at it, we said, well, this is AIDS, according to the books. Now, in 1988, the government decided to create the national program to fight HIV and AIDS and the first national commission to fight AIDS and the STI, Sexual Transmitted Infections Program. Also in 1988, we established the Epidemiology Surveillance Program for HIV to account for the trends. Now, in 2000, it was decided to create the National AIDS Council. The National AIDS Council is the body that now runs what I would call the AIDS business in the country. It's a body where sits the government, the NGOs, civil society, the private sector corporations, and this is the body that defines the policy, general policy. Now, because the situation is becoming worse and worse and worse, last February, the president of Mozambique decided to take an initiative, and for 5 days he stopped his hard work and he decided to meet with several groups. He had special meetings with youth, women, religious leaders, traditional leaders, private corporations, and discussed with them at length the situation in the country and what could and should be done. Mm-hmm. And it's still early, but one of the results of this presidential initiative is that it raised the awareness all over the country of the dimension of the HIV and AIDS drama in Mozambique.
Was this a reflection of the sort of personal concern or comfort level of this change of presidents?
Well, I can say because I have a close relation with the president in this. He called me several times and said, tell me what's going on. Yeah. What can we do? Yeah. I mean, we cannot just sit down and look at this because what I'm seeing in the country is a tragedy. And we've been talking, and at the beginning of this year, he said, okay, I have to go and talk with the people. We must find answers for this.
Yeah. But this explosion of new infections in the late 90s is now becoming much more visible in terms of full-blown AIDS symptomatic.
Yes, and bed occupation in hospitals. Yeah. And now almost every Mozambican knows someone who is HIV positive or has a relative that died of AIDS.
So this all began to accelerate very dramatically in the last 2 or 3 years?
In the last, I would say, 5 years. Yeah. 5 years. Since 2000, we saw the explosion in the country. The number of patients coming to the hospital, the number of young people dying, the number of teachers, nursing staff, even doctors dying. Now, the major HIV interventions in our country are the same as in any other African country. Voluntary counseling and testing, prevention of mother to child transmission, prophylaxis and treatment of opportunistic infections. This is very important. Nutritional support is being discussed in my country at length now, because until now, nutritional support is not part of the package of treatment. And it's been discussed in Africa because the patients are complaining a lot. You're just giving us tablets, but it's difficult for us to swallow the tablets and so on and so on. Psychological support, home-based care, information and education and communication, the issue of universal precautions for the health workers in particular, and then the issue of the treatment with antiretrovirals, which has started to accelerate since late 2004.
How many are on treatment now?
At present, it would be roughly 30,000. But we started late in 2004, and until December 2005, we were around 19,000. But the target for this year is 40,000. and for next year, 90,000. Now, I'm going to talk quickly about some program assumptions. What are the key background issues? First of all, for us, integration of prevention and care are essential. You cannot just, for 5 years, focus on prevention, and in another 5 years, the pendulum goes to the other way, and you start talking about prevention and care must go hand in hand. Second, substantial efforts currently underway to address prevention. Because we understand that if we do not stop the trend at a certain moment, we won't be able to deal with the epidemic. So prevention is first and paramount to stop this increasing trend of infections in our country. Now, significant resources have been devoted to HIV care and to treatment. Now, the strategy in my country, because we are so short of health workers, is the integration of HIV and AIDS care at primary health care. We do not favor the issue of specialized units, because you have it everywhere in the country, in each district. How can you have specialized units? You have to do it in any unit you've got. Second, assure sufficient funding to cover investment and recurrent costs. Third, create a nationwide comprehensive HIV care system. This is what we are doing at present, building on link with preventive activities, link with TB control, and link with sexual and reproductive health activities. So we do it. The buzzword for us is integration. And I'm a firm believer that vertical programs do not help countries. Provide public sector treatment with antiretrovirals to all who meet the clinical criteria. And the treatment in Mozambique, as in any other African countries, is free of charge for the patient. And one of my main messages is to strengthen the health services nationwide. So instead of focusing on a single disease, what we should be doing all the time is to strengthen the health services. We expect in 2 years to be around 150 patients in treatment. So in 2008.
150,000.
Yes, but I will show you the. We want to expand all components of the HIV care, voluntary and counseling and testing, PMTCT, and but we are now discussing, like in Botswana, if we should go on with the testing being voluntary. Mm-hmm. This is a major issue for us. And we see what's going on in Botswana. They decided to move from voluntary to routine testing, and they are getting good results. So we are in the process of discussing this now.
Is this a controversial issue within the legal ranks?
No.
It's not.
It is basically with the international donor community. Human rights and so on and so on. But
when you say routine testing, I mean when President Mohai was here in the end of 2003, when this policy was being actively debated, they were pretty careful to make clear that this was not a coerced.
It is not.
That there was consent.
Yes.
You were routinizing it and making it the testing part of all procedures.
Yes.
When you accessed your health system.
Yes.
Makes sense. And we here in the United States are moving very rapidly towards that.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen the announcements, the CDC announcements in the last six or 8 weeks. We're moving that direction. Yeah.
It was good for us to know that the CDC is also going in that direction, because CDC has a lot of influence in the international donor communities in our countries.
Yeah.
You see? Then we favor family-centered clinical care for HIV clients. So avoid creating special places in the health unit where you just deal with HIV positive, because this creates stigma. They just go there and do the same as the others. And because we are so short of physicians, we are now training physician assistants and nurses to deal with the treatment. And we are using the very simplified drug regimens, and we are trying to increase the laboratory support. Now, one important point of our strategy is the community engagement to improve psychosocial care. We try to engage as much as possible the community. And we are also using a lot the people living with HIV and AIDS to do prevention activities. The rest, training, supervision, logistical and laboratory support, and continuous operational results. Now, these are the plans, please.
Just on this question of stigma, I mean, how do you characterize the level of stigma that you confront in Mozambican society versus what you might observe in other societies in Southern Africa?
All over Africa, the stigma is very high. Very high. And you understand that stigma doesn't come from the person living with HIV and AIDS. It comes from the others. And what is the root of stigma? It's fear. You fear the disease. So unless we deal with the fear, stigma will remain there. But at present in Mozambique, it's a major issue. I know of health workers that did die because, and they had the treatment inside the hospital where they worked. But the stigma was so strong that they preferred to die instead of revealing their status. And this is terrible. So one should never underestimate the issue of stigma in Africa, and in particular in my country.
And how have the churches been? Trying to confront stigma.
Yeah, the churches have been very helpful. They are the first ones to come. But I think that the main weapon we have to use is making more and more people which have the infection come public. This is the main weapon. Unless you get more and more and more people coming public, nothing will happen. Because those that are saying we should do this, we should do that, they are seronegative. Our people need to see the face of AIDS. If you don't know anything, you fear. So stigma has its roots in the fear of the unknown. That's the point. These are the sites that we are using now and going to use in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. And these are the numbers that we intend to reach. I said 40,000. This is the official number that we give to the international donor partners, World Bank. But for us Mozambicans, we are trying to reach the 50,000. Next year, 90,000. And in 2008, between 140,000 and... But I'd like to remind you that at present, we are treating around 10% of the patients in need of treatment. That is why one of the priorities next year will be, this year and next year will be the acceleration of the treatment. Because we need to reach at least, in the next 2 years, at least 50%. And still people will die for lack of treatment. Well, these are just information about people that are in treatment. The important message in this slide are the adherence rates. What we are seeing in Mozambique is remarkable. Almost nobody leaves the treatment the moment they start, which is incredible. Now, this is one of our big problems in Mozambique, prevention of mother-to-child transmission, where the number of pregnant women that we are reaching is so low. Why? Because there was no integration between the HIV program and the sexual and reproductive health program. They were going different ways. Now we are integrating it, and these numbers will become much higher. This is one of the... You should all be part of the movement against vertical programs, because vertical programs down at the grassroots are a disaster. Can you imagine myself as a minister visiting a district, a remote district, where you see an ambulance? And then I look at the ambulance. The ambulance is nice, and then I decide to make a meeting with the people in the region, and they complain. Suddenly the men start saying, look, this is unjust because we cannot use the ambulance. So after the meeting, I went back to the local authorities and said, what's going on? Why are they complaining? And they say, look, we were told by the ministry that this ambulance is just for sexual and reproductive health, only for pregnant women. I said, but this is crazy, because this ambulance is for patients. If you have a road traffic accident, say, no, this is just for this program. This is one of the results of vertical programs. So I had to say, no, forget about this. There is no single ambulance belonging to a single program. They all belong to the Ministry of Health. I'm in charge. They will serve all the patients. Which is sensible. I mean, how can you say?
Is it a legacy of historical development that creates these vertical programs and the adherence to them, or are there interest groups preferring vertical programs?
There are interest groups, because the money goes there. And you know very well that, unfortunately, the international donor community works in waves. You have a wave of maternal and child, and then it stops. Then we have the wave of HIV/AIDS. And I do remember this, because for training, I'm a general surgeon. And for several years, I needed a special equipment in my ward, and I couldn't get the money. So I went to the maternity, and I asked the gynae people to ask for the equipment, because they had the money coming from maternal and child health. So they got the equipment, and they gave it to me. And I was able to use it and save lives with it. But I couldn't convince the donors that I could save lives, because my program was not important. This is just an information about the operational research we are doing, because when you start in a country with shortage of staff and you start accelerating and expanding programs and you don't have a very good group to monitor and to evaluate, then you can run into problems without knowing it. And that is why we are doing a lot of operational research to see where are we heading on. Now, the team of yesterday, one of the teams of yesterday, sustainability. Of course, we are very much concerned, because nowadays the international community pushes all the governments, says you have to treat more, you have to treat more, you have to enroll more patients, more patients, more. Look, you still 10%, you must reach the 100% by 2010. And we say, okay, Suppose in a country like Mozambique in 2010 we reached 250,000 patients in treatment. And then suddenly PEPFAR disappears, the Global Fund becomes something from the past. What will we do with 250,000 patients? What can we tell them? And when we address this question with the donor community in Mozambique, they say, no, it won't happen. Who knows? Yes. So we are very much concerned with the issue of sustainability. We are trying to have an HIV care model that is standardized and simplified so that different types of health workers can work on it. The drug procurement, which is vital because the patient that is on treatment cannot remain a single day without a tablet. And in the third world, the drug procurement and distribution is very, very critical. We are trying to do the drug procurement with other countries to reduce the costs. And this is specific for Mozambique. The major donors have agreed to long-term commitment within the sector-wider approach framework. Mozambique is the only country, I was told, in the world that has got this sector-wide approach framework, in which the funding coming from all the countries goes to a common fund. And then we are able to manage it.
Except from the United States.
The United States, the World Bank, and other financial institutions. But we Mozambicans were very... We don't rush. We wait and see. Things will change.
What explains your success at creating this pooled arrangement? Being the first to have this.
Mm-hmm.
What explains that? Was it a matter of diplomacy? Was it a matter of...
Yeah, I would say diplomacy, because we, for years, we were telling our partners that the way they were helping us was generating a lot of duplications and inefficiency. I mean, each country would come to the government of Mozambique and say, look, this is the money. Now, this is the way I want you to report. So at one time in the early 90s, we had more than 50 systems of reporting, one for France, one for Italy, one for Spain, one for Belgium, one for the States, one for... So we wouldn't work. We would spend about three-quarters of our time just preparing the reports. So with the common fund, it's just one fund, one way of reporting, and we manage the common fund with a monthly meeting. Every month we meet with all the partners and we say, look, the government wants to do this with the money. And they agree with us. We all sign. And there you go.
But what was the key in convincing those who are participating to sign on to this? How did you go about achieving that?
We were very stubborn. In each meeting we would say the same thing. This can't go on like this. Look. You're always talking to us, Mozambicans, about efficiency. Have you seen anything more inefficient than this? And it was not easy for them to listen to this every month. So they came slowly to understand what we wanted. Now, challenges. First of all, reinforce the national health system. This is my main message, and this is not for Mozambique, this is for Africa. If you go to any country in Africa, you will see that our problem is that we have first of all, private sector is weak. Forget about South Africa, which is different from the rest. But if you exclude South Africa, you go to any African countries, what is the weight of the private sector in health? 5, 10, 15, not more than 20%. So the bulk, the vast majority of the people depends on the National Health Service. So we need to strengthen the National Health System. And Of course, one could discuss at length what is the meaning of reinforcing the national system, because an health system has several components: infrastructure, human resources, finance, and so on and so on. All of this needs to be reinforced. But the backbone of any national health system are the human resources. If you don't have human resources, nothing will happen. You cannot improve financing, monitoring, and evaluation because you do not have human resources. So, for us in Mozambique, the main task in the health sector for the next, I would say, 30 years will be the acceleration of training of human resources. And this is very clear for us. So anyone that comes to us and says, we want to help you with health, I say, okay, let's sit down and talk. How can you help us in training of human resources? We need many more schools of nursing and other groups. We need a lot of teachers. Our main bottleneck now is teachers, because we are a Portuguese-speaking country. Even if a group of people in the States say, we want to help you, you will arrive to my country, but the problem is that you speak English and the students speak Portuguese. Of course, you can do it in a way we call trilateral. You can put the money and bring people from Brazil that could teach. But the teaching in Mozambique, teaching and learning, has to be in Portuguese. There's no other way.
How much Brazilian involvement do you have now?
Almost zero.
What about Portuguese, the tropical medicine?
Nearing zero.
Zero?
Yes, zero.
Why is that? Why is there not more interest in the part of the Brazilians than Portuguese?
Brazilians are a little bit far, you see. It's the issue of distance. What we know from Brazil is the World Cup and some soap operas from the TV, which are very popular in my country, but nothing much. There are what I would call a rapprochement now, but it will take some time until... And Brazil, the main difference between Brazil and Portugal is that Brazil is a big country. More than 200 million people. Portugal is a very small country with 10 million people. So we can get easily much more teachers from Brazil than from Portugal. Financial resources, we do have. I can't complain too much about finances. I can complain about the way the finances are oriented. And it's good that to have the World Bank here, because you have been very reticent to help us in building new infrastructure. The moment we ask you to build new infrastructure, then you start moving this way, that way, that way, and nothing happens. Sorry to be so direct. We have the issue of coordination, procurement, and distribution, especially in medical equipment, which is so difficult. And, of course, monitoring and evaluation. Now, risks: insufficient funding, at least in the future, lack of coordination, not only among partners, but even inside the ministry. Management is a major issue in my country. We lack staff. Staff that is expert in management issues, and you can see this all over Africa also. We are concerned that in the future we will have patients with low compliance, and then we will have resistance to antiretrovirus, but so far the adherence rates are very high. And there is always this issue of competition between programs. You never know what will be the mood in 3 years' time, and then the money will run from HIV to other programs. So we are constantly competing. So in conclusion, The development of a national plan was essential to coordinate a response to HIV/AIDS. Fortunately, we do have political will at highest levels of the Mexican government, and this is helping us in the health sector. Presence of key donors willing to commit to long-term investment in the plan through this swap. Involvement of all partners in the process of building consensus. The HIV initiative in my country is one of the largest initiatives ever undertaken by the Ministry of Health, especially in what concerns the acceleration of treatment now. Now, an integrated HIV and AIDS response will require significant expansion and support of programmatic planning, financial systems, and human resources development, better coordination among all Minister of Health sectors, donor agencies to support broader health sector reform, the sector-wide approach and not vertical programs, and directly and indirectly supporting service delivery beyond HIV/AIDS. That was my message. Major constraints for the next decades in Mozambique, the extreme shortage of human resources. Thank you.